Na Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namine Namaste Saraswate Deve Gauravani Pacharine Nirvisesha Shunyavadi Pastacha Desha Tarine. Hare Krishna. So we've been discussing the topic of time. So time is a very interesting element or commodity, if you will. It differs from all other elements or commodities or assets in this world because it's something that we cannot put a price on. If I were to give you a gift, say a mountain of diamonds, a mountain of gold, something of so-called value, ultimately you can put a price on that. Surely the mountain of gold will be extremely expensive, but you can put a price tag on it, or a mountain of diamonds. But what price tag can you put on just even a moment of time? Right? If you lose something, you can simply go to the store and buy another one. Even if you lose a brick of gold, ultimately, if you just get the right amount of money together, you can go buy another one. But a moment of time, how much do you have to spend to get that moment back? So time is priceless, actually. So if we want to give somebody something, wouldn't you want to give them something which is the most valuable gift? Imagine if we could give somebody our time. So this is the most valuable gift in all the worlds, is to give somebody our time. So Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, in the 16th chapter, that dvo bhuta sargo loke smin, that in this world there are two created beings, only two created beings in this whole world. And what are they? Daiva asura, the divine and the demoniac. So what is the difference between the divine and the demoniac? So it's explained that the divine are those that simply want to give Krishna all of their time because they understand the value of time and that time should be used in solely Krishna's service. And the demoniac, their agenda is to not give Krishna their time, to devote their time to something else. So there's only two agendas in this world then. There's the divine agenda, which is teaching people how to actually utilize their valuable human form of life in the service, direct service of the Lord, without wasting one moment. And there's the asuric, or evil, or demonic, or Satan's agenda, which is how to teach people not to use their time in the service of the Lord. In that demonic or asuric agenda, what's being propagated is actually five different levels of ignorance. In other words, we can recognize where is the demonic agenda by analyzing what is being propagated or taught to us. So in the demonic agenda then, five different layers of or levels of avidya or ignorance are being thrust onto the soul. So that first layer of ignorance is identification with matter. That it causes the living entity to identify as a product of matter. Such theories as evolution theory, that we are nothing but a bag of chemicals, that life evolved from chemicals, life is chemicals and nothing more, etc., etc. I mean, there's many types of theories out there, all based on this idea of evolution theory. So to identify oneself as a product of matter. And the second layer of ignorance is it causes the living entity to subsequently believe that death is the end of everything. If I'm just a product of matter, then certainly death means the end. Curtains closed. Therefore, they fear death. Thirdly, to convince the living entity that you are not a spirit soul. Or in other words, to cause the living entities to be so dumbed down, that they can't even comprehend that I'm a spirit soul, and that there's something more than matter and the laws that govern matter. I have no ability to even comprehend something more than that. Fourthly, the avidya, propagation of avidya, convinces the living entity that their happiness will be found in sense gratification. That, well, obviously, if I'm a product of matter, I am this body, then surely my happiness is going to come by satisfying the senses of the body. Consumerism, right? The advertisement industry, etc., propagates this idea. And then fifthly, to cause the living entity to be downright mad for sense gratification. In other words, the senses are so out of control, so overstimulated, that the mind and the senses become completely overtaken by lust, and one becomes completely mad for sense gratification. So wherever we see such propagation or so-called education going on, we should understand that this is the asuric agenda in the world. Now, Lord Chaitanya's movement is to teach, obviously, the divine agenda of how to use all of our time actually for Krishna's service rather than serving the demoniac intentions or agendas. So this is the difference between compassion and envy. The demonic agenda is one of envy. How to teach the living entities to compete with each other for sense gratification, convince them that there is no God in control, and to allure the living entities that even in the name of religion, to allure the living entities into actual sense gratification. A very covert way of attracting the living entities. That even in the name of philosophy, education, religion, many living entities are not actually using their time and energy in Krishna's service. They're actually selfishly motivated. So, the Krishna consciousness movement is actually a movement of compassion, because we're actually meant to teach people that there is another way to live, that it's not necessary for the living entity to be victimized, captivated, imprisoned, cheated by the asuric agenda. So we're living in a world which obviously is running by more like demoniac qualities, right? The whole atmosphere is surcharged with such. And even persons who try to take to Krishna consciousness, many times inadvertently, not on purpose, inadvertently or indirectly, end up supporting the demonic agenda rather than the divine agenda, the propagation of Sanatana Dharma. So it behooves us to know the difference between the two and to refuse, actually, to refuse to be part of that system. So there's one little story of a philosophy teacher who was giving the final exam to his college class. So the students assembled for their final exam, and the professor was sitting in front of the class, and he said, okay, the final exam consists of only one question. He said, you have 2 hours for the exam, and it's only one question. So then he stood up, and he said to the students, write an argument, a persuasive argument, that this chair does not exist. You have 2 hours. And tomorrow I will post the grades outside my door. You can come and find out what your grade is. Okay. So the exam goes on. And the next day, all the students go to the professor's office to find out what their grade is, right? Just post it outside the door. And they were all speculating, you know, like what kind of grade they were going to get and this and that. And they were talking about, you know, that guy over there, you know, he's going to get an F. Oh, really? Yeah, he walked out after 2 minutes. You know, I stayed for the whole 2 hours. I'll probably get an A and this thing. So they go to look at the grades, and everybody failed. The whole list failed, except one person. One person got an A. And they were like, what? Who was that kid that got an A? You know, so they found out from the professor, you know, and then they went to that student and said, well, we all flunked and you got an A. But you're the one that walked out after 2 minutes and we were all there for 2 hours. What did you answer on your exam? So he said, well, when the professor posed the question, prove to me that this chair doesn't exist, I simply wrote on my paper, what chair? If I don't accept that the chair exists, then that's the proof, right? So, what was this student demonstrating different from all the other students? His perception of reality and his refusal to buy into the popular paradigm. The mechanistic paradigm, that if you see it with your eyes and hear it with your ears and taste it with your tongue, whatever, that this thing exists. So he was the most intelligent student because he pointed out to the professor that I don't accept your paradigm. And the teacher gave him an A. So similarly, those of us who are pursuing Krishna consciousness or hoping to pursue Krishna consciousness, we actually need to look at the world in a completely different mindset, with a completely different vision than we're actually being taught to do so in the material world, by the material world. Otherwise, we ourselves become swept away and captured by the mechanistic paradigm, which is the asuric paradigm, actually, the mechanistic paradigm. So, Srila Prabhupada actually wanted us to teach by example, Right? We've all heard that. That we're all meant to teach by example. And out of compassion, Srila Prabhupada really wanted to show the world that there is another way to spend our time. There really is another paradigm that we can live by. A paradigm by which Krishna is in the center and all pursuits for material life can be pushed away. So it might sound easier said than done. But Prabhupada really wanted us to show by example. And if we're not showing the world by example, then we're actually cheating the world of an opportunity to belong to Lord Chaitanya's movement, to live by Lord Chaitanya's paradigm. So, there's one morning walk conversation, little excerpt from a morning walk conversation that I wanted to just read. Prabhupada and the devotees were walking in Hyderabad, and they were discussing different things. And then they were discussing, like, lifestyle and that kind of a thing. And Prabhupada brought up the concept of the Varnashrama Dharma Institution. So Prabhupada said, therefore, Varnashrama Dharma is the beginning of the perfection of material life. Beginning. Chaturvarnyam maya srishtam. God has created. If you adopt this institution of Varnashrama Dharma, then your perfection of life begins. And then a devotee said to Prabhupada, everyone is sending their sons and daughters to the universities and colleges, and they're getting a degree, but they're not getting any jobs. Does that sound familiar? I meet so many students, like a lot of students. They graduate and they can't even get a job after they went to a big university with a big degree. And then they're working in a restaurant or something just to pay their student loan off a little bit. Prabhupada answered, Krishna never says that you send your children to the university and make them fools and rascals. One who is depending on job, he's a Shudra. That is not education. Education is not meant for the Shudras, but for the Dvijas, twice born, the Brahmanas, Kshatriyas, and Vaishyas. Shudras are never for education. So their so-called education means creating so many Shudras. Unless he gets a job, his education is useless. Therefore, he's a Shudra. Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, they will create their own means of livelihood. That is Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya. Therefore, they are unhappy. They don't get job, neither they're able to work independently. So here Prabhupada's making a strong point that actually the devotees are supposed to be independent, ultimately. Even in the Varnashram system, the Brahmanas, Kshatriyas, and Vaishyas would be independent. So what Prabhupada's illustrating here is we're not meant to just become part of that paradigm. He wanted us to teach by example a different way of living. So he very strongly would stress Krishna's instructions in Bhagavad Gita, right, of growing their own food, etc., etc. Prabhupada wanted the Varnashram communities to develop based on the agrarian economic system. So for the sake of ourselves, for the sake of teaching others how to get out of the clutches of the demonic paradigm and actually be a part of the divine paradigm, Shri Shri Radha Damodar Ki Jai. that we actually have to go beyond simply teaching people how to add Krishna to their life. That is certainly step number one, to teach people how, by doing whatever they're doing, they can keep their life basically the way it is, but just add Krishna to your life. One drop of Krishna today, two drops of Krishna tomorrow, three drops of Krishna the next day. Drop by drop, add Krishna to your life. But ultimately, Prabhupada wanted us to go beyond just simply adding Krishna to our life, to the point of making Krishna the complete all-in-all of our life. Because this is real love, as we were saying at the very beginning. If you want to give the greatest gift to somebody, you want to give them the most expensive item. And the most valuable item is time. Because even if you have all the money in the world, you can't purchase even a moment of it, or a micro moment. So to give Krishna our direct time is the greatest act of devotion that one can offer. To do it more indirect route is certainly nice, but it's not the topmost. So we're actually meant to elevate from neophyte platform to Majjhima platform to the Uttama platform. Now the Uttama Bhakta can go about in the material world, whether it's school or work or whatever people do out there, and totally not be affected. Because an Uttama Bhakta actually sees Krishna everywhere. They look at something, even if it's material, a so-called material thing, but they just see Krishna. Krishna's always appearing to them, reciprocating with them. So in Uttama Bhakta, they don't have any problem in the material world. But the rest of us who aren't on that level, when we're out in the material world, we can very easily become affected. So therefore, we have to be extremely careful. Prabhupada said, when he was talking to his disciples, he said, the problem with you Western boys and girls is that you're not enough afraid of Maya. And of course, that also pertains to Indian-bodied boys and girls today, too. So the problem with us is we're not enough afraid of Maya. And the thing with Maya is she has very, very tricky ways, very covert ways of attacking the living entity. So covert that we don't even notice it. Just like, how do you spell Maya? Shruti, how do you spell Maya? M-A-Y-A. Well, there's another way to spell Maya. W-O-W-O-L-F-O-L. Do you know what that is? Anybody know what that is? W-O-W-O-L-F-O-L. Write it down on a piece of paper, see if you can figure it out. W-O-W-O-L-F-O-L. Remember, we're talking that Maya is very covert. Anybody figured it out yet? No? No, you can't look it up on the internet, Avello. W-O-W-O-L-F-O-L. A wolf in sheep's clothing. See it? A sheep wears wool, W-O-O-L. Now you separate the two O's and put the word wolf in between. So you end up with W-O-W-O-L-F-O-L, right? A wolf in sheep's clothing. So this is Maya. She comes to us in the form of a beautiful, soft, cuddly sheep. But she's actually a wolf inside. So similarly, in the material world, the Asuric agenda is so tricky. And it's advertising that this is all we have to do, is be part of this paradigm and our life will be very happy and successful. Everybody's on the conveyor belt, right? That you join the modern educational system, enter the workforce, get that house with the white picket fence around it, two cars and a couple of children, and then what happens? You turn around and do the same thing to them. Okay, here's your college fund. Now you also go to school, and you also get a job, and then you also get that house with the white picket fence, and then they turn around, and the next generation, and it just propagates. But actually, inadvertently, many of us may be actually utilizing our time, like I said, inadvertently, to help propagate the demonic or satanic agenda. So Prabhupada very much encouraged that devotees propagate in the world the Varnashram Dharma paradigm, which is a interrelated relationship paradigm in which everyone works like a team, like a family, for the propagation of Krishna consciousness, but simultaneously for the propagation of a Krishna conscious lifestyle, material lifestyle, that everyone can be peaceful, happy, and prosperous, even in the material, on the material level. So now some devotees may say, well, we can be Krishna conscious even if we are stuck kind of selling out to the, you know, material paradigm. We can still make it, because if we just keep the instructions of Guru on our mind and do our sadhana nicely, we can get through it unscathed. No problem. Even if we think we're on that level, which is actually a very high level, like we said, it actually takes an Uttama Bhakta to move around in the world and not be affected by Maya. But even if we're on that level, if we're actually doing our sadhana, part of our sadhana is reading Srimad Bhagavatam daily, right? So what do we find in the Srimad Bhagavatam? We find many, many, many stories of wonderful devotees, much more advanced than we'll probably be in this lifetime. And we're actually meant to take a lesson from their lives. How did they spend their time in Krishna consciousness? How did they utilize time to become Krishna conscious? And when they were Krishna conscious, how did they utilize further time? So there's one nice example here in the 9th canto, 5th chapter, concerning Ambarish Maharaj. So everybody's probably familiar with Ambarish Maharaj, a very opulent and extremely spiritually advanced king. So here in the 26th verse of that chapter, Shukadeva Goswami says that thereafter, because of his advanced position in devotional life, Maharaj Ambarish, who no longer desired to live with material things, retired from active family life. He divided his property among his sons, who were equally as qualified, and he himself took the order of Vanaprastha and went to the forest to concentrate his mind fully upon Lord Vasudeva. Now, in his purport, Prabhupada is stating here that Maharaj Ambarish was undoubtedly liberated in any condition. So even as a householder, even as a king, he did deal with a lot of material energy. I mean, imagine those of you who have a job or go to school, how much material energy you have to deal with. Well, what to speak of a king of the world? So Maharaj Ambarish, even as a householder and as a king, Prabhupada said, was undoubtedly liberated. But as an ideal king means what? Not just that he was an expert manager of the kingdom, but he was an expert leader by example. So he's saying Ambarish Maharaj is an ideal king because he's going to show his citizens the proper path for perfection of life. So as an ideal king, he accepted the vanaprastha order of retirement from family life. It is essential for one to renounce family responsibilities and fully concentrate on the lotus feet of Vasudev. Therefore, Maharaj Ambarish divided the kingdom among his sons and retired from family life. And then in the next verse, 27, in that purport, he also says that the devotee is never satisfied thinking, this is the limit of my devotional service. The more he engages in the service of the Lord, the more service he wants to give. This is the position of a devotee. Maharaj Ambarish, in his family life, was certainly a pure devotee, complete in every respect, because his mind and all his senses were engaged in devotional service. Savai mana krishna padaravindayor vachamsi vaikunta gunanuvarnane. Maharaj Ambarish was self-satisfied because all of his senses were engaged in devotional service. Sarvopadivinir muktam tatparatvena nirmalam rishikena rishikesha sevanam bhaktir uchyate. Nonetheless, although Maharaj Ambarish had engaged all his senses in devotional service, he left his home and went to the forest to concentrate his mind fully at the lotus feet of Krishna, exactly as a mercantile man, even though complete in wealth, tries to earn more and more. So from the example of Maharaj Ambarish then, Prabhupada's making the point that even if one is perfect in their devotional service, which may include, like he had, a position of dealing with so much material energy, living like the rest of the people, being a part of the whole system, still, by his example, he showed that ultimately the devotee needs to step outside of that system and show by example a life which is independent of the materialistic paradigm. So there's a lot of talk today about sustainability, right? Sustainable agriculture primarily is the big talk today. And the Krishna consciousness movement actually wants to propagate a sustainable, not just sustainable agriculture, but an entire sustainable system based on primarily the economy. So the current system, the current economic system, is not sustainable. People are utilizing their time, putting lots of effort, lots of energy, lots of money into education, job training, and then having the job and everything that goes along with it. But it's not a sustainable system. It has allowed us to solve our financial needs, certainly. One can make money, and with that money, buy the things that they want to buy. It's allowed us to solve our financial needs, but it has not allowed us to solve our economic problem. There's a difference between our financial needs and the economic problem. What is the economic problem? How to sustain a system which can be propagated for generations and generations and generations without fail. And what is that system? It is the God-centered system, the Krishna-centered system, that by keeping Krishna in the center, what does Krishna say in Bhagavad Gita about the perfect economic solution? Anad Bhavanti Bhutani. That word, what is the real economic need of people? To eat. Right? You can have lots of money, but if you can't buy food with it, then what good is it? Right? So the real economic need is simply food. After that, everything else falls into place. The shelter, the clothing, and what have you. Because if you have food, you can always trade with people who make these other things. Right? So that's what Krishna's stating in the Bhagavad Gita, that food is the basis. And where does food come from? Food comes because it rains on the fields. You can have a field, but if there's no water, nothing's going to grow. But well, where does the rain come from? Comes from the performance of sacrifice. And in this age, the scriptures say, forget all the sacrifices. There's only one sacrifice that's going to work in this age, because we're not qualified to perform, because these other sacrifices have to be formed just right in order for the result to come. There's only one sacrifice that us lowly human beings can do in Kali Yuga. Even if we do it with some fault or mistake, it'll still have effect to some degree. And that is the Harinam Sankirtan movement. Yajna. Harinam Sankirtan Yajna. It's a sacrifice to spend our time. It's the most valuable gift, right? Time. So if you can give your time to someone, you're giving the most valuable thing. So that's all Lord Chaitanya is asking for. He's simply asking that we give our time to chant Hare Krishna. And by that chanting of Hare Krishna, if enough people get on board and chant the Maha Mantra, then all the demigods will be pleased. The rains will come in the right place at the right time. The earth will allow all the seeds to germinate. The grains will grow, etc. And there'll be plenty of food, Prabhupada said, plenty of food to feed 10 times the current world population. The current world population is between 6 and 7 billion people. And they're predicting that by 2050, it's going to be, I don't know, 12 billion or 20 billion or I don't know, some number. And they're making a big fuss about it. Oh my God, how are we going to feed people? You know, so now we have to have wars because there's not enough food for all of us. So I have to, you know, kill all the people in your country so I don't have to compete with you and I can have all the food for my people. You know, so that's what wars are being fought over, basically. But Prabhupada said we can feed 10 times the world population, no problem, simply by following this formula. So this is the real purpose of the Krishna consciousness movement, is to teach people how to actually utilize their time in the propagation of Sanatana Dharma. Sanatana Dharma is a very high platform. Sanatana Dharma means constant, 100% full engagement in Krishna's service. It's not going to be possible for people to just jump on board like that. But for most people, the substructure of what's called Varnashrama Dharma needs to be put into place. And from that platform, that is like an easy liftoff point, if you will, launching pad onto the platform of Sanatana Dharma. So this Daivi Varnashrama Dharma means in connection with Sanatana Dharma. And by helping people, teaching people how to live in this way, this is the best use of our time. It is the real act of compassion. Prahlad Maharaj said that let the envious people be pacified by engagement in devotional service. Because by engagement in devotional service, they will come to think of the welfare of others. So this is the highest quality in spiritual life. In Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement, is this mood of compassion. So for ourselves, we may be very happy and satisfied and content to live our life in a particular way and take care of my family and take care of myself and what have you. But real compassion means to make that sacrifice and to actually live our life in such a way that it shows to others by example how they can step out of that system that is just covering them up with the five levels of avidya and instead step into another system which completely liberates them from the clutches of Maya. So we'll stop there. We have 10 or 15 minutes for questions. Jai Jagannath Prabhu.
Because we don't see it happening so many places around the world within our own movement, but to speak of other places. And also particularly, because it seems like Varnashram really begins with the education, how one is educated. And in the modern situation for devotees, there aren't very many educational facilities for their children outside of what's provided by the demoniac agenda. And so our kids are sent to these places and they're learning certain ideologies which are deeply ingrained. And then because we've grown up in the Krishna consciousness movement, we come to the Gita Nagari retreat, we do our practices and so on. But in our, when it comes down to it in terms of lifestyle, it's the lifestyle that we've been trained with from these places. And so I see the mind easily just kind of shutting off. Not my so much, because I have a lot of appreciation for everything you say, but I can see that taking place in mind, just saying, oh, that was totally impractical. There's no way to even apply that. And thank you very much for the class, Mataji, and then finish. So how might I not do that? Mm-hmm. Where is the practical steps to be taken in terms of considering the proposition you made in a very serious way?
Yes, it's very easy for the mind to think that, oh, it's too hard, it's impractical, or it's even impossible. Prabhupada gives the example of one of his godbrothers went to England to preach. And one, was it Lord Jetland, who said to the sannyasi who was preaching that, can you make me a Brahmin? Because he understood what Brahmins were. You know, he'd studied Indology enough to know what Brahmins were. Could you make me a Brahmin? And the devotee said to him, oh, sure. You just have to do these four things. Oh, sure, I'll do that. What is that? No meat eating, no illicit sex, no gambling, and no intoxication. And the man immediately replied, impossible. Right? Now, is it impossible? It's not impossible, nor is it impractical, nor is it actually very difficult. Proof is that thousands and thousands and thousands of devotees are doing that. So the mind is our worst enemy. The mind very easily says, oh, that's difficult, that's impractical, that's impossible, or that's for other people, not for me. You know, I'm okay. So that means the mind is not actually properly attached to surrendering to Krishna. See, we're still harboring our material attachments. What's the tenth offense to the holy name? to maintain material attachments even after understanding so many instructions on the matter. Right? So we maintain the material attachments that I want to do what's easy, what's comfortable, what comes, you know, quickly, what works for me right now, shreyas or prayas. Prayas means the immediate gratification, the immediate results, the immediate success. And shreyas means the future benefits, the future successes, which I may not reap any so-called benefit now. I have to put a lot of investment into it, right? It's real easy to go to the casino, put $100 down, and 30 minutes later walk away with $10,000. Isn't that easy? But it's another thing to take $100 and invest it into like a real honest business and maybe a couple years down the line have $10,000. So we want the immediate thing. Push a button, boom, satisfaction, results. So a real devotee, a pure devotee is not interested in their own advancement or satisfaction. A pure devotee is always thinking. The pure devotee's mind is always agitated with thoughts on how to benefit others. Not just how to, you know, figure out what works for me in my little own corner of the world, my family and my little group of friends. A pure devotee's mind is always agitated. They can't sleep at night because they're constantly thinking with compassion how to benefit the whole world. And not just the 6 billion measly people that live on the planet, but for generations and generations and generations, for the next 10,000 years of Lord Chaitanya's movement. So if we don't set up a system, it's not that we have to create it. It's already created. We just have to execute it. You know? So if we don't execute, propagate the God-given success formula of how to live in this world. After all, Krishna's the one that created this world. So don't you think like the person that invented this microphone? Don't you think the person that invented the microphone is the most qualified to tell me how to use it properly and how to fix it if it breaks and all that kind of stuff? Right? The person who created it. So similarly, Krishna created this whole material world, and the time element is his impersonal representation in this world. So isn't he the most authoritative to teach us how to use it? But instead, we come up with our own economic formulas, right? People are going to the universities getting big, big degrees in economy to come up with economic theories and agricultural engineering to figure out how to grow food for more people, right? How to solve this problem and that problem. But why don't you go to Krishna? He's already got all the answers. So we may wear our tilak and our dhotis and saris and chant Hari Bol, Hari Bol, but do we in our heart really believe that Krishna has the perfect system? So the mind is still, see, that's proof that we are affected by the material energy. We're saying, no, it's okay. I can live in the material world and I'm not affected. I'm getting by Guru and Krishna's grace. I'm getting by. I'm protected. But the proof that we're not is that we're still influenced. We still have these doubts. And the proof that we have these doubts is to the people that we love most. Who do we love most in this world? Okay, ourselves. And then who's next? Our children. What did you say? That's probably true for most of us. So the people that we love most in this world is generally the children. So if we really love our children, why don't we make the sacrifice and take some temporary inconvenience and trouble and whatever it is to dedicate our time to setting up and propagating Krishna's system for living in this world? Why are we allowing our own children and their children and their children to just keep plugging into the mechanistic satanic paradigm? It's a whole drama out there, and we're like little inadvertently becoming pawns, it seems, in that picture. And we may say, no, I'm protected, et cetera, et cetera. But the proof is that we have doubts about Krishna's system. So it behooves us to try to use our time in a less selfish way and try to use our time. And if we do use our time for the welfare of others, we'll see Krishna really, really, really reciprocating and bringing real success to our movement. Because we're meant to lead the world, and we can't lead the world if we ourselves look like everybody else. You know, it wasn't Prabhupada's. Prabhupada didn't, you know, cross the Atlantic Ocean in a freight boat and have two heart attacks on board, etc., etc., make so many sacrifices just to come to the West to start a little religious institution where the kids are all, you know, good kids, and they don't smoke and drink, and they go to school, and they're the top of their class, and then they get good jobs, and they impress people with their good qualities, or their good this, or their good that. That's nice. We should, you know, that's fine. But that's not really the mission. That's just, something is better than nothing, but it's not the real thing, you know. So, like we read Ambarish Maharaj, his example. Because he had faith. See, our problem is our faith is very low. So, I only dedicate my time to Krishna according to my faith. And I won't take any risks unless I have faith, strong faith. You know, you saw the picture of Prahlad yesterday? Hiranyakashipu's demonic associates pushed Prahlad off the mountaintop. But Prahlad had such faith. You know, imagine if somebody was going to push you over the edge of a mountain or whatever. Wouldn't you be screaming at the top of your lungs? I mean, we would probably die right there of shock before we even, you know. Prahlad Maharaj, you know, that he got pushed off the top of the mountain, and he was just like, whee, flying in the air, because he had perfect faith that if Krishna wants to protect me, he'll protect me. But we can't take the tiniest little risk, you know. But we have, in our own midst, many devotees who have given up really good paying jobs, really successful university tracks, you know, that they were on. We have devotees in our midst right now who gave up a very promising career, you know, money, position, etc., 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 simply to fully engage their time in Krishna's service. It's all Krishna wants is our time. He doesn't want anything else from us because everything else has a dollar sign on it. Time is the only thing that doesn't have a dollar sign on it. So if you give somebody your time, you're giving them your love. So Krishna's asking, take that risk. Do you trust me? Sarva dharmam parityaja, mami kam sharanam praja. Do you trust me? That you can abandon all varieties of so-called duties and responsibilities and paradigms and just surrender to me and do my bidding in this world? Do you have that much trust in me that I will completely take care of you? And usually the answer is, well, sort of, kind of. Well, that's not good enough. We have to have complete faith in Krishna. So how do we get that complete faith? Well, we need to spend our time in developing faith. And we should try to go more on the fast boat rather than the slow boat, because human life is very short, as we were hearing earlier. And when those mice chew away the rope, you know, we're going to fall to death. So we don't have a whole lot of time to develop our faith. So we better gear it up a little bit. Okay, anything else? Time is over. Okay, one last. Prabhu, back. We started 10 minutes late, I'm sorry, so we're just going to go over time by 5 minutes.
Thank you, Madhi. My question is, like, in the past, we have seen, like, a lot of devotees have done what you are saying. Like, we see New Vrindavan. Also, I think in Gita Nagari also, there were a lot of devotees before, like, on the farm itself. And even the Gurukul was there, but how would you, like, it seems nice, you know, to listen, but there are, like, Maya also attacks in devotee associations also.
But I didn't catch the last part. What was the last sentence you said?
I said Maya also attacks in devotee associations. And, like, if we see the history of New Vrindavan or even Gaudiya Math, you know, like, it seemed it was running nice, and then, you know, now you go, there are, like, very few devotees in New Vrindavan, and one point of time, there are so many devotees. So what would you say about that?
Yeah, so sounds like you're propagating the philosophy that if someone fails at something, then that means it's impossible. So that's not a very logical conclusion. I tried to grow some tomato plants last year and they failed. So does that mean this year I shouldn't try to grow some tomato plants? Yeah, so this is Maya's trick. Again, we said Maya is very tricky. She's a wolf in sheep's clothing. Maya's very tricky. Her job is to crush your faith. Oh no, that Prabhu over there has faith. What can I do to take his faith away? So that means we're Kanishta. Kanishta means tender faith, like a tender plant. You know, when a plant first comes out of the ground, it's very tender. If you just knock it the wrong way, boop, it falls over and dies. You know, just a little bit too much water, a little bit not enough water, it dies. You know, but you get a big tree, these trees can survive a drought because they've got their roots really in the ground. So even if there's a full summer drought, they're not fazed. But because we're so neophyte, the slightest little, you know, the wind blows the wrong direction and we abandon Krishna consciousness. So just because something failed doesn't mean therefore it's not the correct thing to do. It might mean that maybe it wasn't done correctly. Like, we made mistakes, you know. You go to the kitchen and you follow the recipe and it burned or it came out crummy. What do? Throw the recipe away? No, you just say, oh, Donna Kelly's a lousy cook. All right, let me go to the kitchen and make it and show her how it's done. You know, just because I might flop at something doesn't mean that thing is wrong. So, yes, this is a perfect example of Maya trying to steal the devotee's faith away. So then what do? We invest our faith in the material paradigm. That's what she wants us to do. That's what she wants us to do. So we are inadvertently playing into her hands. So we must take stronger association of devotees and develop our faith to protect us from that being victimized by Maya. Okay, we better stop there because time is not on our side at this very moment. We have to move on to the next class by Jagannanda Prabhu, followed by Gaura Aarti at 6 o'clock. Okay, thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.